International.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
This is Radio Nederland, the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland.
You're tuned to Swiss Radio International in Bern.
This is Free China as a presentation of the Voice of Free China, the international service of the Broadcasting Corporation of China.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba.
Broadcasting from Cuba, free territory in the Americas.
This is Radio South Africa.
This is Yugoslavia Radio Belgrade calling.
This is Israel broadcasting from Jerusalem.
This is Radio Pyongyang of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC.
Well, very good hello to everyone listening today. It's very nice to have you with us for another edition of Media Network Plus. Now, we recently told you a couple of months ago about a new DRM receiver called the Titus II. That's all we actually mention on it. It's a new DRM receiver. Now, one of the organizations actually that's been behind it is KTWR based in Guam. Next, actually, well, our good friend Jeff White from WRMI and Jerry Plummer from WWCR sit down with George Ross to talk about this new receiver.
So you've been there for a long time in Guam, right?
Yes, I've been in Guam for 27 years now.
Wow. And now you're going back to the States?
Yes.
Uh-huh. But you'll continue to work with TWR?
Yes, I'll be working with TWR more on a global position than what I've had in the past, working from Guam and with Asia.
Uh-huh. You'll continue to do the frequency coordination?
Yes, I will.
Okay. Now, here at the conference in Jordan, you're going to be explaining, in fact, today as we record this, a little bit about the situation with DRM and the Titus II receiver. That's received quite a bit of response,
yeah.
No?
Quite a bit of response, and as George will tell us more, there's been a fair amount of interest in terms of pre-production. George will tell us, but I think it's going to happen, I believe.
I think there have been almost a few thousand pre-orders for the receiver, and you have one with you, right?
Yes, I do, and the testing that we did here proved to be not only good picking up a DRM broadcast, but it's very sensitive enough to pick up some analog broadcast. We picked up TRT yesterday, and it was clear.
So this radio will pick up anything in the, what is it, shortwave, medium wave? Does it do FM?
Yes, it does FM as well. Uh-huh. Now, I need to make a statement here. We're calling it an SDR solution rather than a radio or a receiver. And, of course, as you know, as you've seen it, it's actually an Android backbone, and from that, it operates as an SDR. So it picks up AM, FM, and shortwave, both in analog and digital.
Both, yes.
Have you had a chance to take a look at this,
yes,
Jerry?
Yes, it's an amazing thing. I look at it as a tablet initially, you know, and George says it will do analog, it will do digital, it will do DRM, it will do medium wave, it will do FM. It's a very sturdily constructed device.
It has a bunch of applications on it, for example, DRM30, right, FM?
Yes, that is one of the apps that will be on it when the pre-production rolls out. Mm-hmm. So not only DRM Plus, but DAB will also be part of that app. And, you know, I'm excited because as it's not a TWR solution, it's actually being manufactured by Pantronix.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just doing a lot with them as we're looking at implementing them, especially in our Asia region. But when it comes to the apps, I think we can get just about anything there. I like the CEO for Pantronix said, you know, however you want to use this solution, just think of what you really need for it as a media provider and come up with an app for it. So the thing that I haven't seen yet that I'd like to see, it probably won't do it, is I'd like it to make coffee for me as well.
It'll do just about everything else. It will, yeah.
Now, you may remember, Jerry, this thing was debuted. The world debut was at the HSCC, the last one in Miami.
Yes, yes, it was. And it was effective there, too. It was a good presentation. And that's what I believe is when we started working on the pre-orders at that time.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what is the status now of this pre-production order?
The pre-production order, a lot better than the one we saw in Miami, to get a little technical with it, is the manufacturer has been able to put in the shielding that he wanted in the receiver, in the SDR, so that it doesn't pick up the digital noise and such that's around it. And we found, wow, what a difference. Wow. And he's also been working on the configuration with the antenna so that it's very sensitive. And I don't know how many of the listeners would know anything about picking up a DRM broadcast, but the SNR is what you
signal to noise ratio.
Yes, it comes up on your screen, and you will see at 8 SNR, you can pick up the ID of the station, which is remarkable. Yeah. And then for the DRM receivers and SDRs that I've used previous to this one, you need at least 17, if not 19 SNR to pick up the audio robustly. And of course, this with its telescopic antenna, even by the time it gets to 15 SNR, you've got a full quality broadcast you're listening to.
So this operates with just a standard whip antenna?
It does. It does, but it's got the jack so that you can use a long wire. In fact, I've used a long wire and I was amazed at what I could pick up.
So when do you think the pre-production order will be out?
Well, I was talking again with the CEO of Pantronics, and we were hoping to have it out in January. Mm-hmm. However, he's had a few things happen, hurdles that he's going over because of holidays and all with getting a component specifically available. So it's behind by about 3 months. Mm-hmm. And he's confirmed with me that it will be the pre-production order, which will be at least 1,500 units on that list, Jerry, that you had talked about, will be out end of March to the first half of April.
That's good, yeah.
So where do we go from here with DRM now? You're doing regular DRM transmissions from Guam?
No, we were still only doing tests. We have, we're going to be starting to do a test broadcast in the A-17 season, and then probably mid-season we have two broadcasts that we will be anticipating doing from Guam,
right,
and it will grow from there. In fact, you know, something I don't know, to me it's kind of exciting, as I'm excited about this receiver solution, but when you look at the propagation dynamics that we have right now and with the low sunspots coming down, how do you deal with that? You know, you have to go down in lower meter bands to reach your target audience.
Right.
However, you go down in lower meter bands and usually you have to increase your power quite a bit. So one of the things we've been testing is, as we go into lower meter bands, is using DRM. And because you have such a better ratio with your power, it seems like that could be a real solution for the first time ever dealing with a low sunspot cycle.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that say also from a dollar standpoint that it's more cost effective? And that it uses less power?
Absolutely. It does.
Yeah, well, that's an important point.
Guys like us that have to chase dollars, that's very important, right?
Do you think, Jerry, you think this will generate a lot of interest among the shortwave listening community in North America?
I would think it would, and the mere fact that it's actually for the first time in my lifetime, it's kind of like the Cubs winning the World Series. There's actually going to be a device that is affordable that will do what you want it to do. It should generate tons of excitement. Mm. Open up a new market, maybe, you know?
And what about for your listeners in Asia, George? Is that going to be something accessible to them?
It certainly is. In fact, one of the key factors that Pantronics wants to do is work with countries so that they can do assembly of this unit in their own country, which brings the price down for them, mm-hmm. provides jobs even, but it also mm-hmm. makes it available throughout the country the way we'd like to see it. And, you know, I was at the Asia Broadcast Union General Assembly at the end of last year.
Right.
And the amount of broadcasters, both government and private, throughout Asia that were interested in the prototype that we had there were very excited.
Oh,
and we
good.
See implementation happening right now.
All right. So, do you think this could be lead to a resurgence in DRM?
I would suspect it would. It's the... George and I had spoke earlier about this with William Glenn Tapley about the old chicken and egg concept, you know. Maybe this will finally put that to bed, put that to rest, and we move forward into a new DRM chapter.
Is that what you think, George?
Absolutely. I like what Glenn said now that you mention it, Jerry. He said, it has hatched. But it's more than just that, because there really has never been a takeoff. And the one thing that Pantronics has proven to us is we want to get units out there. We don't just want to have an order form and have things going on, because previously I don't think we were able to see more than 100 units of any other DRM receiver
right,
out there. And now we have an SDR that's called a full media solution, because it not only deals with getting DRM out there, but broadcasters are looking at every avenue that they can use to supplement what their normal broadcasts are. This provides the way in which to receive all of that. So along with that and the vast numbers, Pantronics is looking at by mid-year to be doing tens of thousands of units a month and have a complete rollout as it goes worldwide.
It's very user-friendly, too, vis-a-vis some of the previous things. And it's not just DRM. It's many things. It can be many things to many people.
Yes. In fact, we have on the unit that I have, unfortunately, there were only two, we call them desk model units available, because they're, you know, just still pre-prototype. But we have TWR360, our blog site, on there, and that plays just as effectively as it would listening to a DRM broadcast.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So the next few months are going to be very interesting on the DRM front then. Thank you, George, for talking with us today.
Well, it's been good to be with you both.
Thank you very much, George. We'll see you later, okay?
Well, that, of course, was the deep voice of Jerry Plummer from WWCR and Jeff White speaking to George Ross from KTWR about KTWR and the new Titus II DRM receiver. As we find out more information, we, of course, will bring it to you. You are listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Category 105, it is PDF to total journal.
Speed 220, Category 105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
We now go to Australia and the mobile phone industry. The revelation that the internet company TPG is planning to become Australia's fourth main mobile phone company has sent shockwaves through the telecommunications industry. TPG plans to spend around $1.9 billion to build a new G4 mobile phone network. And the news has sent Telstra's share price plummeting. But will it improve services and help bring down prices? Fran Kelly speaks next to Mark Gregory. He's an associate professor from the School of Engineering at RMIT University.
Telstra investors were certainly surprised by this announcement, judging by the very sharp fall in its share price yesterday. Did you expect TPG to make this move now?
Yes, most certainly. The decision by TPG has been long coming. We saw discussions last year between TPG and Vodafone about how they could better leverage each other's services, and that tie-up didn't go as far as some had expected, where there was the possibility that TPG and Vodafone might merge. And because that hasn't happened, what we see now with TPG licensing Spectrum and moving into the mobile market for it, you know, in its own right, has been long expected.
It's a significant outlay, $1.9 billion to build a new 4G network, phone network. How are they going to fund this, and what are the risks for the company in making such a substantial investment?
Well, TPG has been expanding quite rapidly for the past 15 years, and the strategy of the company is to make acquisitions, move into new markets, and just to continue expanding. And that process has been ongoing now for a long time, and it has been going very well for the company. But the basis of the expansion has been capital raising, and of course it has also meant that it's got to keep finding new customers. And so the company's approach has been one of offering low price bare bones accounts, whether it be to broadband or to other services.
But does TPG have an advantage over its rivals? You know, obviously the obvious ones, Telstra, Optus and Vodafone.
Well, when it comes into the mobile market, of course it would be moving in into a market where which is already fairly saturated. Between Telstra, Optus and Vodafone, they've got the entire market. And in Australia, that means that there's probably about 20 million services that they're spread between the three companies. So what this means is that TPG is moving into a market that's fairly saturated. So any customers that they get, they've got to take off the other companies. And for that to happen, that means competition. And in this particular case, it's going to be competition at the low end because the customers that are typically with Telstra and Optus are there because of either the promise of better service or better network reach, or they're there because they want the extra services that those companies offer, such as the sport and Foxtel and other services.
So what exactly is TPG planning to build? Will it be more advanced infrastructure that could offer better data speeds than what's available from the three current providers?
In the first instance, TPG are going to build a 4G network, which means that they're going to build out a network that is comparable with what the other companies have. Of course, during that rollout, TPG would be pretty much the same as all the other companies are at the moment, and that is preparing to upgrade that network to 5G. So with TPG coming into the 4G market so late in the piece, it really means that once this 4G network's built, as all the other companies move to 5G, TPG is going to have to move as well.
Would this move help coverage in regional areas that have really struggled to get decent mobile coverage?
For regional customers, what this move means by TPG is really no change, because initially TPG have indicated they're going to try and get a network built that will reach about 80% of Australians. And so if you really look at that, that 80% is pretty much going to be customers within cities and urban areas and the larger rural towns and cities. So for people in those areas outside of that, at this stage, they're not going to be able to get a TPG service.
Well, it's disappointing. We've seen Telstra increase its prices over the last several years. In fact, many of us have been stung by it. Now that it's locked in its customers, they obviously are able to do that. Will this move bring prices down for customers across the board? I mean, if you read all the headlines, and I have, they're all about a price war, aren't they? They're all about, you know, what this will be for mean for customers, which is perhaps lower prices.
Most certainly. For the lower end of the market initially, we should see some competition commencing probably in about a year from now as TPG gets ready to turn on its market, turn on the network. TPG is already in the market as a reseller, so it's a virtual network operator at the moment, and it's linked up with Vodafone's network. So what we should see really is TPG tries to move across to being an actual network operator. We should expect to see some discounting. But one of the key reasons for moving into the mobile market is the idea that really once we get to the 5G world, it's all about bundling of services. And so companies are going to be tying up their customers, providing mobile service, home internet service as one bundle. And so it's really all about being able to offer the bundled services. And so by moving into their own network, TPG is going to be really at the forefront of offering those bundled services. But whether or not it can capture some of the value adds that Telstra and Optus has, the support that they offer over their networks, at this stage, really, TPG is going to find it difficult to compete at the top end.
Yeah, it's been a very long time since a major player has entered the mobile phone market in Australia, and that company was Hutchison. It ended up merging with Vodafone. Does TPG stand a chance?
Oh, most certainly. TPG has had a spectacular success run over the last 15 years. It's made some very, very astute decisions in terms of purchasing other companies and mergers that have then moved into takeovers. And so really TPG has been growing at a rapid rate over that time. So those decisions mean that the management team has been getting very good advice in terms of what it should be doing. It is reliant, of course, upon that management team. But at this stage, what we really see is that TPG is growing in the market, and competition is going to be the major factor from this move. And over time, we should expect to see TPG targeting not just the lower end of the market, but the entire market.
And that was Mark Gregory, an associate professor from the School of Engineering, RMIT University, speaking there with Fran Kelly, and about Australia's mobile network and how things are, well, on the mobile landscape, of course, are going to be changing very soon. Now, before we get to this week's propagation forecast, I want to talk to you about Radio Netherlands. Well, on April the 15th, which is this weekend, so you might be hearing this program after the 15th, Radio Netherlands returns for broadcast from an original news van from, I think, the 1960s. The programs are going to be going out at the following time. 3985 kHz, that's 3985 kHz, from 11 to 18 hours Central European Time. 6005 kHz. From 11 to 15 Central European Time, 7310 kHz from 11 to 12 hours UTC, and from 16 to 17, that's not UTC, that's Central European Time, and then finally on 15560 kHz from 14 to 17 Eastern Central European Time. And this is a special program for the 70th anniversary of Radio Nederland. So do tune in, because I think it should be rather interesting to take a listen to, because it's the 70th anniversary, of course, of Radio Nederland. So do tune in to that. All right. Well, as you probably are aware, last week we couldn't bring you propagation because there was a slight technical glitch for some reason with the propagation forecast. But everything is fixed and Glenn Hauser is now standing by. So what has happened? Or rather, what's been happening? And what we can expect? Glenn, over to you.
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through April 15th. Normal, except normal to fair at high latitudes on the 15th. From Space Weather South Africa through April 15th, magnetic conditions quiet to unsettled. Shortwave fadeouts unlikely. MUF unstable. Met Office UK says there is a slight chance of minor geomagnetic storms April 16th. From FK Yanda in Prague, the geomagnetic field will be quiet on April 14th to 16th, 20th and 30th. Active to disturbed on April 17th, 18th and 23rd. Mostly quiet on April 19th, 21st, 29th and May 2nd. Quiet to active on April 22nd and 24th to 28th. Quiet to unsettled May 1st. the magnetic activity forecast from Space Weather Canada, greatest DRX nanoteslas on April 18th and 23rd to 27th in the auroral and polar zones. From SWPC in Boulder, a geomagnetic field with G1 minor storm levels likely on April 17th, ANK indices of 20 and 5. G2 moderate storms April 23rd, with ANK of 55 and 6. Lowest ANKs of 5 and 2 on April 14th to 16th, and 20th to 22nd. Solar flux rising from 72 April 15th to a peak of 95 on April 20th and 21st, and down to 72 by May 3rd. William Hepburn's VHF UHF DX maps show extreme tropospheric ducting all week off the west coast of Mexico, possibly reaching Hawaii by April 16th and 17th. All week off West Africa, across Cabo Verde into the mid-Atlantic. All week from Djibouti off southern Arabia to India, and from India to Myanmar through April 16th. Off Namibia and Angola, April 15th to 18th. Across the South China Sea, April 16th and 17th. Between Luzon and Taiwan, April 17th.
Thanks a lot, Glenn. And we've come to the end of the program. Now, for those who do go to our website and download the program, because some of you listen to it on satellite and you want to hear past editions, as you're probably aware, our website is going through a makeover at the moment, so it's actually just one page. Now, you can still listen to this program as well as past editions. If you go to pcjmedia.com on the front page, you'll find a little bit of information and the PCJ logo. If you click on the PCJ logo, it'll bring you to the program bank where you can listen to this and other PCJ programs. Our new website will be launched in a few weeks' time. But I'm not going to tell you what else is there. You'll just have to stay tuned, or rather, log on closer to the date. All right. If you want to get in touch with us to let us know what you think of the program and also how you heard the show, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, mnp@pcjmedia.com. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well. We'll see you again in 7 days' time. 73 and 88 to the ladies.